Father, thank you so much for loving us. Thank you for providing this opportunity. Thank you for just this beautiful place to come to, warm place and cozy place. And we just pray, Father, you bless this time tonight. Let it be a time that we learn and grow and mature and be more prepared for your very coming. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen. All right, so if you remember last week, we looked at really the first 3.5 years. And if you remember, in short, we knew that there's going to be, before the 70th week begins, there's going to be that 10-nation confederation that's going to be in place. And that confederation, we know that's going to be in place because something comes out of that 10-nation confederation called the Antichrist, right? He's a little horn in Daniel chapter 8. So when he comes out, he's involved with the peace treaty. Now, the peace treaty, I should probably elaborate a little bit more detail. We don't know the details, but it does say he makes an agreement with the many in Daniel 9:27. So we think there's going to be more than just Israel involved. Israel's definitely going to be involved with the peace treaty, but there's going to be probably other nations involved. And because of it, because there's going to be probably multiple people involved with this agreement, it's going to be hard to decipher who the prince that's going to become the beast really is, who the Antichrist is that makes the agreement. So we think there's going to be multiple people. We're going to go as one of those guys, you know, whatever, 10 people, whoever might be involved with signing the agreement. So, but that's all what we're going, that's going to happen before the 70th week begins, when, because he, Antichrist, is the one that initiates the 7-year period. And so I kept saying that there's, everything really begins at the midpoint, where all the prophecies do, and your handout are the things we're going to look at today. Those are the things that all are completely tied to and associated with and happen as a result of the midpoint. The midpoint is a big event, a huge event. It's actually multiple events. As we go through, I think you'll see that very much is the case. So, anybody have any questions before we dive in? Before we start moving for it? Yeah.
I just was wondering if you were going to cover the bowls.
Well, before we get to the bowls, which aren't into way out here,
the seals.
The seals first. Yeah, we will talk about the seals. In fact, next week, because most of the seals are in within the first half, and for the most of which is within its Great Tribulation itself, we'll talk about the seals next week. So I'm trying to take us chronologically through the period one time before we start diving into text and particulars and details. So yeah, there's going to be the seals, which are not the wrath of God. They're the conditions that are being set up. And we can look at around the world, we can look at what's happening in our country today and see conditions are being set up. It's not hard to look at the news today and see how people seem to be easily believing things that are so obviously false. I mean, it seemed pretty obvious. I mean, we're seeing a world where deception seems to be the winning ruler anymore, doesn't it? Seems like whatever direction you're taking it, it's pretty obvious that there's a lot of deception going on there. Let me grab me a...
One other question, Pastor. Often people talk about the Great Tribulation as being a 7-year period.
What?
But it really isn't a 7-year period.
Right.
More of a 3.5-year period.
Yeah, that's a very true statement. The tribulation, as most people call it, the 7-year tribulation, there's no foundation for that. I mean, I understand how they get it, how they derive it, but it's not from the text. It has to fit the system. They have to call the whole 7-year period tribulation, otherwise it wouldn't fit. In particular, pre-tribulation rapture, it wouldn't fit at all. So they have to, because the passages we're going to look at today, when you look at them and you look at what they say, unless you have this assumption that there's a rapture that has to occur before it all begins, it won't make sense. I mean, we're going to see a lot of texts that won't make sense if you're a pre-tribber today. So it is true. Jesus says, when you see the abomination that causes desolation, then he said, then there will be great tribulation. We'll look at that verse today because we're looking at the midpoint today, right? So we're going to see a whole bunch of points that are related to that. So yeah, so 7-year period, first 3 years is really about political posturing. There's a lot of politics going on. There's that 7 or 10 nation confederation. And there's some, it talks about the Antichrist will take away 3, and he pops up, and so he would be 11, but now it's back to 8. It's a little bit of that's going on, but there's no real battles. In fact, think about it. If there's a peace treaty made right here at the beginning, and there's not a lot of prophecies about this period of time, for Israel in particular, what do you expect this first 3.5 years to be like? Peaceful. They had a peace agreement. And everything, it seems to be upheld until he breaks it in the middle of the week. So I expect this period of time, at least for Israel, at least because of the agreement, that there will be a relative peace. Now, we can always say that any period of this time before the 70th week, where we live now, or any time during that time, there can always be persecution, and I would expect it to never stop. The idea of persecution is as a believer, is unfortunate, but expected, right? We should not be surprised if we go through hard times in difficult situations at all. So the first 3.5 years is really all about politics, and there's a peace agreement. And even when Jesus talks about that period of time, he talks about the beginning of birth pains, but the end is not yet. He repeats that idea, the end is not yet, multiple times. It's not until right in the middle, which we're looking at today, that everything really starts opening up. A whole bunch of Old Testament, New Testament events will take place. They're closely related to each other and tied to each other, but they're certainly distinct. So I put down, I think I had it down to 13. I kind of consolidated. I had a longer list, and I kept consolidating, and some ideas can be merged together. And so I tried to make it so that it's succinct. So this is the title page. So what we're going to be looking at is all these events that take place right in the middle, and that's a big event, a number of events. So number one, this one's going to take probably the one we'll probably spend the most time on is number one, so you're going to feel like we'll never get through all 13, but I think we will. Number one takes more time because there's a lot of details to it that build this idea. So the first one is that the beast, that is the Antichrist, appears to be raised from the dead. Right? He says the beast appears to be raised from the dead, and we're going to look at Revelation 13, and Revelation 17 talks about that idea. So let's go there first. First one, Revelation 13. Oh, before we go there, that's right, I'm going to build this a little bit more first. So the verses you have, 13 and 17, are true, but I'm going to look at this one other text first, which is Daniel 12. Because what happens is, how is it that the Antichrist seems to die and then come to life? There's an event that takes place before his what appears to be an assassination. And that event will be something that happens in heaven.
Thank you.
Yeah. So Revelation, or Daniel rather, chapter 12, talks about that. So, and I got some good visuals for us, so hopefully it will make sense. Daniel 12:1. At that time, we're talking about Michael the archangel, right? At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. He's a watchman for Israel as a nation. And watch this. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. So Michael's going to stand up. He's going to do something. And we're going to explain what that something is. And then there's going to be a great time of trouble since there never was since there was a nation. The period called the Great Tribulation, right? Which is begins in the middle. And we don't know when it ends because it's an unknown period of time. How long? But Jesus says it will be cut short. That's why we don't know how long it's going to last. Otherwise, it would last from the middle all the way to the end, which would be 3.5 years, right? But it's not going to last that long of tribulation. So Michael stands up. There's going to be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. Nothing else like it. There's no such thing as tribulation and great tribulation. There's only great tribulation. There's this one period of time called tribulation, and that's what he's referring to. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who was found written in the book. And he's talking about Israel. And that's not the significant point. The point is, Michael's going to do something, and there's going to be a time of trouble at this point. So let's dive into that. Now, Revelation 12 talks about, let me read this verse, and I'll show you a visual of it. Revelation 12, rather, 7 through 9 says, and war broke out in heaven, right? So Michael did something, and now we're reading war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and we're in chapter 12 of Revelation, so the dragon we know is Satan himself. Just a couple of verses before, you see he's the one whose tail swung a third of the angels, and he's trying to kill Israel, the woman, here in chapter 12 of Revelation. So war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. But they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan. I think he got all the descriptions that we can think of in one verse, right? We know who he's talking about. There's no ambiguity here, right? We all know who he is. Called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So somebody asked the question, well, what is Satan doing now? Right now, he has access to heaven. He's still doing the kind of things that he did when he accused Job, right? And he was saying all kinds of things about Job and anybody, any one of us. He accuses us. So he has access to heaven and to earth. But at this point, he's no longer going to have access to heaven. He's going to be confound to the earth only. Go ahead, Karen. You had a question? Oh, I thought I saw your hand. Okay, good. So what's going to go on is, and so people think that Satan is the most powerful angel out there. I don't know how. We know he's an enemy. We know he's deceitful. But Michael is able to cast him down to the earth. I think that's pretty powerful too. When you think Michael's able to do that, that's good to know that Satan's not. You know, people have weird ideas that he's like almost God in his power. He's not even in the category of God. Nothing even comes close to it. So another angel, Michael, is able to cast Satan down to the earth, and so he has no longer found place in heaven. So he's no longer able to come back to heaven. So he's no longer going to be accusing anybody. But now that he's on earth and confined to the earth, he's going to be busy. He's going to be active, right? And so let's go on to the next verse, which is, I think, the one on your text. So here's a visual of it. So they're in heaven. Michael does battle in his angels, and Satan in his, the demons or angels, and they do battle, and ultimately Michael casts him down to the earth. Now, when did that take place? Just prior to the middle of the week. So, because this is important to understand that the chronology, that this happens, and then the Antichrist shows up. And there's a correlation between the two as to why the timing is there. This war precipitates the revealing of the man of sin. It's what's going to happen just before the beast is revealed to be who he is, right? The abomination and all that goes with it is all because of this event, and then Satan. Let's just continue the notes. The restraining includes the mystery of iniquity. He's restraining somehow Satan from having full access. So however way that works, we don't know. But one way or another, we know Michael cast him down to the earth, and then Satan at that point will be on earth doing havoc everywhere, persecution, tribulation, and everywhere. So Satan cannot prevail against Michael and his angels, which is pretty obvious because Michael was able to cast him down. And Michael stands aside in the Hebrew there. It's an interesting word, just kind of like he stands aside or he stands up. It's a hard word because a lot of Hebrew words, because of the nature of Hebrew, has definitions that somewhat are random. Like Grant and I were talking about the idea of hell, where the worm dies not and the fire is not quenched. And the word worm can mean worm, but it can also mean scarlet, like purple. You're like, huh? But so Hebrew has a lot of words that can have different meanings that are not even close. So, but anyway, he stands up. Some people say stands aside, but he stands up, I think, here to go and do business. And that is to cast Satan completely out of heaven, which is what Revelation 12 tells us. So he casts him out of heaven down to the earth.
Now, so you're saying that Michael is the restrainer then?
Yes, most people that look at, of course, if you're a preacher ever, you think it's God, the Holy Spirit, and they think somehow the Holy Spirit is, I don't know how you do that because he's omnipresent, that somehow the Holy Spirit is the one that goes up into heaven. But we will deal with the restrainer all by itself in one whole day And so, yes, ultimately, Michael is the one that's been restraining. Michael's the one involved with, his whole purpose is to be the overseer for Israel. And so he's going to limit Satan's control. However control he has in heaven, he's going to limit that and has been when he casts him down.
So he causes the great tribulation. Is he the one that fights against the saints then?
Satan, well, Satan, the Antichrist will.
Yeah, right.
Right, yeah. And so what's happening here, I'm talking about this because this is significant because how is it that the Antichrist comes to life? He's not resurrected. Satan doesn't have the power to resurrect. But he does have the power to resuscitate. I mean, you've heard of people that have died, clinically they're dead, and then they come back to life. Well, how did that work? We would like to think that's a miracle. But somehow, when we'll look at the details of the verses, because it really is clear that he definitely died. The Antichrist died. And we're going to look at those verses actually starting right now. Now, I started here, just as we're going to talk about the seals coming up real soon. There's seven seals. We're going to see the sixth one, the cosmic event. And there's two models. It doesn't matter how you look at it. The first one, everyone seems to agree that the first seal is Antichrist himself. Even a pre-tribber would say, yeah, that's true. The first seal is Antichrist showing up, not as the Antichrist, but as the prince who's making an agreement. He brings peace. That's what he brings as the first seal. And so many will say that the second seal is where he takes peace from the earth, right? And so that's that model, and that's okay. Or you can put a 2, 3, 4. It doesn't matter where the seals are. We're going to see them all, right? We're going to see the first six anyway. We'll never see the seventh. Because the seventh, once it finally is open, right, then the judgments will begin, will be poured out. But in the meanwhile, we will see the first six of these events take place. So whether you put it, the first seal is the beginning of the week, and the second seal right in the middle of the week, right, the beginning of tribulation, or whether you take it that they're more spread out, it doesn't matter, they're conditions. Probably all those conditions will be true to a degree. But relatively speaking, the first 3.5 years, biblically, is very peaceful. There's not a lot going on in the first 3.5 years. There's just no passage that deals with it other than the politics of the prince who ultimately will become, of course, the beast, the Antichrist.
I have another question. Where does the beginning of sorrows, that period in Matthew?
Yeah, so in Matthew 24, when Jesus said, verses 4 through 8, he describes a bunch of things, wars and pestilence and a number of things. And he just said, these are the beginning of sorrows. Most people will say that it begins right with seal one, with this, the beginning of the 70th week. Some people say, well, they can be going on now. Well, they are. They are going on now to a degree. It just may be to a lesser degree and then maybe a greater degree as we move into the week. In other words, the things that Jesus describes in Matthew 24, verses 4 through 8, are just the beginning of sorrows. They're not really the big event, and the big events begins when at the midpoint of the week. Of course, you see this is elongated. It's 3.5 years, and the rest of that is 3.5 years. We don't know how long these periods are. I'm just trying to emphasize that Michael is involved with throwing Satan to the earth. And that's all we kind of learned at this point, right, as far as the detail. So now, let's talk about the beast, and it describes him in Revelation 13 as having 7 heads and 10 horns. And the 10 horns, or what we actually goes back to Revelation, or I'm sorry, Daniel chapter 2, talks about the 10 toes, but I'm not going to overwork that part of it at this point until we're looking at that as a full study. So the Antichrist has these 7 heads, and he's had 10 horns. And he's got crowns on each of the horns, and the name's a blasphemy. He speaks bad words, awesome words, terrible words about God is what it happens there, Revelation 13. But notice what it says about him in particular. Revelation 13:3 says, and I saw one of his heads, these 7 of them here, one of his heads, as it had been mortally wounded. When something's mortally wounded, you think of it as something that died, right? He goes on, and his deadly wound, that makes it even more obvious, a deadly wound, was healed. Oh, so somehow he dies, and he's healed. And as a result, And all the world marveled after the beast. So they're really impressed with what happened here. He died. He's no longer alive. But wait a minute, he's actually alive now. Wow, that's pretty impressive. So the whole world marvels over this event, that the fact that he seemed to die and he comes back. A couple of verses later, verse 14, same chapter, he just mentions the beast who was wounded by the sword, a little bit more detail, and lived. So he's emphasizing that he really was dead, at least the world whole, everyone thinks he's dead, and now he's alive. And he gives this detail that it was by a sword. Now, was it really a sword? I don't know. But maybe. But he says, uses the word sword that really means sword. So maybe he was stabbed, and that's how he died. So that's what we've learned so far, is the beast, the Antichrist, he comes out of the sea. The picture of him is he's got these seven heads, he's got the 10 horns, he's got crowns on each of the horns, and he dies. And the whole world marvels at it because he comes back to life. That's the short of it. Now, a couple more details. Revelation 17 continues it. It's not the only place he refers to it. The beast that you saw was, now watch the verbs here, and watch the tenses here, right? He was and is not. Oh, huh? You go, wait a minute, he was and he's not. So those kind of words get you confused. Wait a minute, he was but he's not anymore? Exactly, he's picturing, telling you something happened to him. He died. So the beast that was and is not and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and will go to perdition. He's talking about the fact that the same guy that he mentioned in Revelation 13 is the same guy he's referring to here. The guy, you remember? The guy that died, he came back to life. Oh, yeah. So he's connecting your remembrance back to chapter 13. It's the same guy. And when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is, makes it even more obvious, right? There in verse 8. He was, like in the past, but isn't not. He's dead. But now, yet he is. And that's pretty important as we go on. In fact, that becomes one of the points further on your chart. The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth and is of the seven and is going to perdition. So back in Daniel, referred to all these different kings, the ten horns, right? Or it started out with 10, and then 3 were taken away, and then Satan, and then there's a little horn that comes into the mix. All this is referring to the same person, the Antichrist. So he's the seventh. In fact, I think I go here. He's the seventh. He's referring back to all the kingdoms that were directly affecting Israel, that had a direct influence over Israel in a bad way. It would be Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Media Persia, Greece, Rome, seven. Seventh is the Antichrist, right? Is the idea of him. Well, he is the Antichrist, but he actually is seven and eight. Look at that again. Look at 17:11. The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth. So he's number seven, and he's going to become number eight. Right? So that we're going to emphasize what happened. He was number seven, and he died, and he comes back to life, and now he's number eight. That's the idea, what Daniel, or especially, I should say, John is talking about. And he's one of the seven. He's one of the seven. In fact, he was number seven, right? And then he dies, and then he becomes number eight. And all this is what's happening basically in the middle of the week, is what's happening here. He's given life, and then he reveals himself to be the Antichrist.
Does perdition, does that mean like destruction?
Yeah, this means destruction. Yeah, it doesn't mean, it's not like a place in hell in particular. It just says he's going to ruin. It also means ruin. He's going to go to his ruin. He's going to go to destruction. He's going to meet his end. And his end isn't a good end. It's going to be a very negative end. So that's where he's going to go. That's what he's going to say.
Thanks.
Yeah. And so the beast, we know what we've seen so far. Does anyone have any questions? There's a lot in here about jumping from number seven, and then he dies, and then he seems to have life again, and now he's called number eight. Kind of interesting concept. I don't know how many looked at that. Even pre-tribbers acknowledge that is the case. Number seven becomes number eight, because there's no timing involved in it, just a reality of the text. It's who he is and what he becomes. So let me summarize what we've seen thus far. Satan is kicked out of heaven. Satan's kicked out of heaven by Michael. Boom, right there, Daniel 12. And then one of the heads of the seventh kingdom is mortally wounded, Revelation 13:3. He's wounded, as unto death. Mortally wounded, a deadly wound was healed, right? And then 14, it said that it was a sword that killed him. The head that was wounded is the seventh, and the healing, bringing back to life, is the where he becomes the eighth. And that's what's going on number-wise. So these can be a little bit fun, challenging somewhat, but I think that's the easy way to put it. Number seven dies, and then he's given life, and he becomes the eighth. The one who was and is not, but now is, and yet is. Satan will empower the dictator to carry out his evil intents, right? In fact, look at chapter 13, the first couple of verses, where it talks about the beast, where he shows up, the Antichrist. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns, ten crowns, and on the heads were blasphemous names, right? That's what we just saw a little while ago. The idea of the Antichrist is just showing up here. That's the first verse that really talks about him as the number eight guy, or the Antichrist. Now the beast, which I saw, was like a leopard, and his feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon, that would be Satan, right? The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and his authority. And so, however way that apparent miracle was done by Satan, the world marvels because he dies, he's alive, and everybody goes, wow, what a great thing. It appears Satan is obviously energizing it. Satan's no longer in heaven. He's been cast down to the earth, and he's got his guy to try to deceive the world. Now, I've got to remember, one of the main goals of Satan is always going to be to kill, more than anything, the Jew. Israelites, more than Christians, right? More than, because the promise that God made about the Israel all coming to salvation and all that has to happen is associated with Jesus coming back, ultimately down to the earth in the kingdom. The kingdom is associated with Israel. And if he can kill all Jews, he can say, God, I won, you lose. You said that you were going to do all these great things with Israel, and I prevented it all by killing the Jews. No surprise, we saw that back with Moses, right? And he killed all the babies back then. And we've seen it with Herod. When Jesus was born, he tried to kill them all. They thought they were going to prevent the Messiah from showing up. Ultimately, he wants to kill all the Jews. And when you look at chapter 12 of Revelation, you're going to see that's the Satan is going after the woman, and God is protecting them. Anyway, and we're dealing with those texts in particular. He chases them through the wilderness, but God protects them nonetheless. He makes sure there's going to be Jews around to the end. So their real emphasis is going to be on killing all the Jews. But Satan is thrown out of heaven, and then the Antichrist, who was the prince back here when he made an agreement, dies. It seems to be assassinated, and then he comes back to life, and we think Satan is somehow involved with that, however way he's given life. It doesn't say that God brought life to him. Satan gives him his power and his authority and all that. So we assume that Satan is the one involved with this deception that he died and was raised again. I don't know how far to take it. I don't know how far Satan's power really is. I don't believe he has the power to actually resurrect a body, which is a whole new body, but to resuscitate a body. We've seen that happen before. And I think that something like that was probably going on with Satan. So I refer to how he the seventh, the others not yet come. And that's what he talks about over in chapter 17. Five are fallen, one is, and the others not yet come. And he is the eighth, and he's of the seven. I mean, the same thing we've been saying. Number seven dies, and he comes back to life, we believe satanically, and then he's the eighth. And that's what he says in Revelation 17:11. Same idea, same message that he said 13 as well. So that was the first point, and I think the others will move a little better, a little quickly, but that one's an important one because it helps us to understand it's supernaturally, demonically influenced this whole second half of the week. So 3.5 years, and all these points all pointing to the middle here, right? So the second one, the prince becomes the beast. Right, and those are the terms that are used. You know, back in Daniel chapter 9, he's the prince that makes an agreement, peace with Israel, with many, so there's many people involved with it. He's called the prince there. By the time you get to Revelation 13, he's a resurrected devil. He's bad. And he's no longer called the prince. He's now called the beast. So he's changing his term from being the beast to the seventh king, which becomes the eighth, which we just alluded to that idea. I just want you to see. I want to make that point separate. So the prince becomes the beast, or the seventh king becomes the eighth king. So there's a change of identity along the way as it moves on. So Revelation 17:11, the beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth. We read a little while ago. Is also the eighth, and he's of the seven. And he's ultimately going to perdition. He's ultimately going to see his ruin, is what he says there. So, all right, so in a little more pictorial way, look at it. So the prince, back in Daniel 9, some kind of agreement, some kind of covenant, some kind of peace agreement he makes, right? And he becomes, from this idea of a prince, well, we don't know what he looks like, we don't know who he is, we have no identity of him, but he's one of the signers involved. And then he becomes this beast, right, the seven heads, and then the ten horns and all that, and that's the kind of the picture of them. And then I have, or the Antichrist as the individual, probably going forward we'll see more, I'll show you more, the picture of him like that. The hooded guy with no face, because I don't want to put a face to it to give you any idea who he is, because we don't know who he is. And I'd rather do that. I blacked that all out on purpose. There was a face in there. I didn't want it to show.
So the beast is the Antichrist.
Exactly. The beast is the Antichrist. So when you go to Revelation 13, it talks about the beast with the seven heads and ten horns that comes out of the sea. That is the introduction of the Antichrist. Exactly right. Yeah. And so the
distinctly different than Satan.
Yeah, it's very different. Now, is Satan indwelling him? Probably. I mean, demons can indwell humans. Satan is an angel just like any other demon in that regard. He probably is indwelling the Antichrist. So in that sense, you could say he's Satan on earth, but we see him as a man, we see him as a person, but he's influenced directly by Satan who's indwelling him, going to be inside of him. Yeah, that's a good question. So going forward, you'll probably see more of the picture of him when I talk about him that way than this. This is the just the visual way, because what's happening with all these, the heads and the crown and the horns, rather, a lot of them have to do with, he's got the power of Egypt and Assyria and Babylon, Media, Persia, and it's all kind of rolled, all the evil stuff in these kingdoms, all kind of rolled into this one guy, the beast. Is the picture. That's why he refers to the seven, the five who have fallen, and one is not yet come, right here. Right, the five that have fallen, I'm just reading from 17:1. Five are fallen, one is, which is Rome at the time John's writing, who was at the time in charge, Rome. Right, so Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Media, Persia, Greece, they've already fallen, one is, which is Rome, and the other is not yet come, the number seven, which is the same guy that in Daniel 9 makes the peace agreement. That's number seven, right? He's the prince. And then he actually becomes the eighth. And he is the eighth, and he's of the seven. So he's of the seven. It makes it obvious that he's not just seven. He's also number eight. He's not just of the seven. He actually becomes number eight. So I just jumped through that one. Okay. So the next point is, of course, we mentioned this many times, and Daniel 9, verse 27, Antichrist breaks his covenant. And we saw this, the same text that, I don't think I quoted because I think we know it. Daniel 9 talks about, if 70 weeks are determined upon that people and all that, right? So it's going to be a seven-year period ultimately in the end. He makes an agreement for 1 week. So you're going to take that agreement. It says in the middle of the week, he breaks his covenant. He's going to break, he's no longer going to abide by whatever he promised back here. He's going to break it, and then we're going to think of him as the Antichrist who no longer abides by his promise, you know, his covenant. And in particular, this is referring to Israel, because Israel is particularly who the promise was made with, right? There may be other nations involved, but from the Bible standpoint, it focuses always on Israel. And so the agreement was with Israel. Okay, so the great persecution will begin. All right, so several texts. I just put a couple there. So because of all this, it's breaking the covenant, and he's now the Antichrist, Satan on earth, indwelling a man, right? He's going to bring great persecution. Daniel 8, and it grew up. The grew up was the, it's the little horn, and it grew up to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the hosts and some of the stars to the ground. We read this on the first week, right? And it cast some of the stars to the ground and trampled on them. And so the stars is a kind of an interesting way of describing believers, right? Daniel 12, verse 13, those who are wise, I'm quoting Daniel 12, 3 rather, those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. So the picture is stars can represent and do represent, in Daniel's view, believers, right? So we're called stars in that regard. So when he talks about he's going to cast down some of the hosts and the stars to the ground and trample on them, he's talking about bringing persecution on them. He's going to bring believers. And that would be Jews from Daniel's standpoint, but it's also going to be any believer at that time, right? That's alive at the time will be trampled down. Same idea in Matthew 24. Jesus said exactly this. This is a great passage. He said in verse 15 through 19, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, right, that event, he's going to set up an image, and we'll talk about that in a moment. When you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet, because he's quoting from Daniel, Jesus is, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, because that's where the persecution will begin, in Judea, and it will spread out, right? And let him who is on the housetop do not go down to take anything out of his house. The idea is to get out in a hurry. It may be important to you, but don't. Just get out of there because your life depends on it. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. I mean, you know, traveling, you got to move in a hurry. You know, you want to grab the diaper bag, you get the picture. It's not going to be an easy picture event if you got to move in a hurry. And pray that your flight be not in the winter. He's not giving you any hints. He's not saying it's going to be in the winter. Just pray that it's not in the winter. You got to make this flight where you got to leave Judea, or on the Sabbath, which you're not supposed to travel on the Sabbath, right? So he's just giving you all these indicators, which I find interesting, because he mentions winter, because some want to say, well, this is all about Israel, has nothing to do with the Christian, huh? I mean, everything from the text is hard to take us out of the context, because that's who Jesus is talking to, his disciples. But he says, see, it says the word Sabbath. Oh, so only Jews have winter. They haven't been around here, obviously. I'm being sarcastic, in Minnesota and places that really have winter. It's kind of funny how they can pick. The word Sabbath is in there, so it must be no Christian involved, and it's just the Jews. It just doesn't fit whatsoever, because he's talking to Christians. And he mentions winter, and he mentions the Sabbath, because they're just things that make it difficult to travel, right? For then, this is what Jesus says, for then, when you see that abomination, there will be a great tribulation, such as never been since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. It says exactly the same thing in Daniel 12:1. It's an unprecedented period of time like no other time. Because that's what it says in 12:1. Daniel stands up, the prince for his people, and then there will be a time of tribulation, exactly such as never been seen. So the point is, Daniel 12:1 and Jesus 24 here is talking about the same point. There's only one period called Great Tribulation, and that's what we're referring to, because in the middle of the week, when this takes place, the abomination, it begins the tribulation. So when someone talks about, Jay was asking a question, someone says a seven-year tribulation, honestly, biblically, they don't know what they're talking about. They can't, there's nothing in Scripture that ever support that. Because those same people would acknowledge, yeah, the abomination begins in the middle, but it's the abomination that initiates the Great Tribulation. That's why he starts saying, well, then it's tribulation in the first half and Great Tribulation in the second half. They're just being creative. How do they get that? No, there's only one period of tribulation. It's the Great Tribulation, and it starts in the middle of the week. Does that kind of make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what's going on there. So tribulation begins in the middle of the week. So from the Christian standpoint, we may see the 10-nation confederation, and then we're going to see some sort of an agreement and a bunch of politics going on for 3.5 years and all this stuff, posturing for power. The Antichrist he's nobody yet. He's nobody until he dies and is resurrected, and then he becomes the big guy, if you will. Bad guy, but the big guy. And we'll deal with that a little bit further on. See him? Okay. So next one, he will stop the daily sacrifices, which we did talk about before in Daniel chapter 8. He will stop the sacrifices. He'll actually use an army that will be given to him, right? So he will exalt himself as high as the prince of the host, as high as God himself. He says, I'm exalted. I'm better than you are, God, right? And by him, the daily sacrifices will be taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. What does that imply that's going on at the time? Daily sacrifices must be going on for them to be stopped. So it's going to have to, so if we're around and we're alive, we haven't died, and we haven't got old, and Jesus hasn't come yet, well, someone's going to be seeing that there's sacrifices that are going on, and they're going to stop. And he's going to be involved with making that happen. And he said, and because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn, the Antichrist, to oppose the daily sacrifices. So he's going to be given this army. This army will be the ones that execute. He's going to say, go stop it, and they're going to go in and stop it. He's not going to do it himself, personally go in there. No, I'm stopping all you guys. No, he's going to bring an army in that's going to be given to him. Probably from the 10-nation confederation is going to give to him. And he casts truth down to the ground. Let me say that again. And he casts truth down to the ground. I don't know. I feel like that's today. Truth doesn't matter. It's whatever you want it to be anymore, especially in the media. It's whatever you want it to be. Truth is relevant. It's irrelevant. It's not really an objective truth anymore. There's no such thing as truth. It's just whatever we make it to be. We just rewrite the history books or whatever, right? But this guy is really going to be a deceiver. And he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and he prospered. So for a while, his power begins in the middle, and we'll see that as one of the points on the chart there. But he will prosper all the way to, more or less, to the end of the week. Then he said in Daniel 9:27, but in the middle of the week, that 70th week, right, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering. He's the one that causes the sacrifices to cease. In Daniel 11:31, and forces shall be mustered by him, sound like an army, right, like he said there in chapter 8, and forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress, and they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation. Two things. He's stopping the sacrifices, and he's going to set up some abomination, right? Which chapter 13 of Revelation talks about is the beast picture that he's going to set up, which I think is one of the points. So we'll move on that one. So the abomination, we just saw that's going to happen, right? The daily sacrifices and abomination are pretty close together, but I think the sacrifices being stopped happens first, and then the abomination is set up afterwards. So Daniel 9:27, so let me jump to, I jumped all the way to 13. I don't want to keep repeating the same verses when they're already one that we looked at, so Matthew 24:15, Jesus again, therefore when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Again, he's pointing to that event of this image that's going to be set up of the Antichrist, or whatever that looks like, I don't know. And then Revelation 13, starting verse 14, and he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which was granted to him, granted to do in the sight of the beast. So you got the false prophet and you got the Antichrist, and the false prophet's whole purpose is to make the Antichrist look good. And so he's doing a lot of deceptive things all in the name of the beast, the Antichrist, right? And he says, by those signs which was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth, which is a phrase used multiple times in Revelation, those that dwell on the earth, that refers to either unbelievers or unbelievers. I mean, it's always unbelievers, every time without fail. Those that dwell on the earth, to make an image of the beast, who was wounded by the sword, again, it has that same verse, he was wounded by the sword and yet lives, right? He was granted power to give breath to the image, so somehow this image breathes, like it's alive, to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, right, he's going to say words, and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So he's going to breathe, he's going to speak, and he's going to kill. This image is going to be doing that. What is that? I don't know. It's going to be bad. Whatever he is, his point is to those that do not worship the beast. That's the whole point, is to worship the Antichrist, is the whole point here, right? So there's going to be this abomination that's set up, this image that's going to be set up, and if you don't worship it, he's coming after you, is the obvious point of the text. So the apostasy, now this is a really interesting one. This is one in 2 Thessalonians, we'll talk about that, chapter 2. So let me jump to that verse. I start at verse 1 because I want to make sure we do understand the context of it. What is the context of this? Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together unto him. Right? He's talking about the coming when Jesus comes to rescue us and we're gathered to be with him. We ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if us. Because some people were saying, the day of Christ already came, you missed it. That's the context of the Thessalonian epistle, especially 2 Thessalonians. You missed the rapture. You missed it all. Oh my goodness, right? You missed the coming of Jesus. He already came. And went, what? This is they're confused, as you can imagine. Right? As if it came from us, as though the day of Christ had come. That's the point of what they were saying. The day of Christ already came. No, it did not. Paul has to correct them. So, and he says, verse 3, let no one deceive you by any means, for that day, what day? The coming of Jesus, the context. For that day will not come unless, and he gives you prerequisites. Two of them, in fact. Unless the falling away comes first. The word falling away is the Greek word apostasia. We get a word apostasy from it. What's an apostasy? Well, it's a falling away from the faith. So what's going to happen in the future, and we're going to see this, if we're alive till Christ comes, if we're alive, this is what we will see. We will see a bunch of people that go to church that say they're Christians, and when the persecution really comes on, they're going to prove that they never were born again. And they're going to say, I don't want anything to do with Jesus. That church is, but they're foolish. They're following fables. They're going to be whatever they're going to be saying. The point is, they're going to be a huge apostasy. And the way Paul explains it, the falling away must be very clear when it takes place. I don't know the particulars, but when we see it, it's going to be obvious. This church and there's all these churches that we know that don't talk about being born again and talking about being, you know, good works and doing this and that and very religious, those guys are going to be apostating because they're already an unbeliever. So they're going to fall away. We're not talking about true believers. We're talking about those who are make believers, those that are in churches, that are following religion, but they're not following Christ. They might think they are. Many of them are deceived into it, but really they're following their own works. If you ask them, why would God let you into heaven, they would say, well, because, and they give you the list of all the things they do, right? So, let no one deceive you by any means, for that day, the day of Christ, will not come unless the apostasy, the falling away, comes first. And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. And when does that take place? Right in the middle of the week. So, clearly, we'll be seeing all this for the first 3.5 years. We're going to see when the man of sin comes on the scene, we're going to see a huge apostasy because of the persecution and the pressure he's going to put on, especially because the next couple of points we get to, he calls himself greater than any god. He's going to try to eliminate all religion. So, but Paul's point is the apostasy, the falling away, and the man of sin being revealed have to happen before Jesus even comes. This is why one of the most difficult passages, if you're trying to go verse by verse as a pre-tribber, very difficult, because it doesn't fit pre-trib in any regard. It does no way, because we're all thinking the rapture is some imminent thing that's going to happen first, even though Paul said, no, these things are going to happen first, and Jesus even talked about the abomination, and I can go through a list of things that have to happen before Jesus comes, a huge list. And so the rapture is certainly not something that's imminent. Even though it sounds good, it just doesn't fit the text. These things have to happen before Jesus comes, And that's all about him exalting himself. So the apostasy, the falling away in particular, is going to happen. And so in particular, how long does the Antichrist rule? Some people, if they haven't thought about it, they say, well, he rules for 7 years. Huh. Yeah, 3.5. Exactly. So the Antichrist has authority for 42 months, is what it says, Revelation 13:5, right? This is what it says. And he was given a mouth speaking great things, right? He's blasphemous, bad things, and blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. How long is 42 months?
3.5 years.
3.5 years, right? It's the same thing as 1,260 days, which we'll see coming up in a little bit. Same exact. So when you see 42 months, 1,260 days, what's the other one? 3.5 years. And there's actually one more. Daniel uses the phrase time, one, times, two, and half a time, one plus two, and a half. It all refer to the same thing, 3.5 years. One and two is three, and then a half. So all these numbers, so sometimes it can get confusing. We're thinking, well, he's talking about 1,260 days, or he's talking about 42 months with the same period. They're all the same period, which really should help our understanding as we go through the text. They're referring to the same second half of Daniel's 70th week. They're all referring to the same period. Okay, so how long is he given to have authority? 42 months, which is from the middle to the end, and that's all he's given, and he's cut off, right? For the Antichrist would be cut off. Then outside, the outside court, for example, in Revelation 11, it's talked about the temple, there's still a temple that exists. He stopped the sacrifices and he set up some abomination of some sort. But John is told not to measure. Look at 11, verse 12. He says, but leave the court which is outside the temple and do not measure it. Do not measure this area. For it has been given to the Gentiles, and they, the Gentiles, will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. The same 42 months. It's all the same period. It's all referring to the same period when the Antichrist comes on the scene. And then it's a time of Gentiles that's going to be treading on and in the temple area. Because he's taken over when he broke his covenant in the middle. He's taken over and now there's Gentiles all over the place. So for a time, when there are sacrifices, it appears Jews will be more involved. But he's emphasizing it's going to be Gentiles that will be treading the holy city, and they ran the outer court of the temple itself. 42 miles. I want you to get that point, right, that idea. So the outside court was given to the Gentiles for the same 42 months. Yeah.
Also, verse 3 of Revelation 11 says shows the 1260 there, too.
Yeah, the 1260. And yeah, and so there's one other time, one other number that's going to be used, And that's also referring to the same 3.5 years. As the Daniel talks about a 1,290 days instead of 60, but that's, we'll get to that. That's actually an extra 30 days at the end of after the 70th week is over, and we'll look at that one as well. But all these numbers are all saying the same thing, as far as the period of time that they're referring to. Oh, yeah, exactly, the next point, yeah. So this is interesting, too. So let's look at that, which is the two witnesses begin their testimony, right? 1,260-day testimony. That's, again, the same period of time, right? Two witnesses. Oh. So the Antichrist comes on the scene, and he's got all this great power and all this great stuff. He's going to deceive the world and all this stuff. But God says, I'm going to give you a thorn in the side. He sends two witnesses, and they also will be around for 1,260 days, or 3.5 years, or 42 months, same period, right? And they're in Jerusalem, and they're preaching, and they're doing miracles. And when we talk about it, again, the two witnesses is a study all by itself. One full day would be devoted to the two witnesses. And so they're going to be doing all this great stuff and in making it difficult for the Antichrist the whole time. He thinks he's got all this great power, but he's on a leash. He's only got so many days, so much time, 42 months. And then he's also got the two witnesses that who knows what they're saying. They're probably calling him out for who he is in any way and making it very difficult for the Antichrist. So that's what it says in 11:3. Did I quote that one? No, I didn't quote it here. What did I, 6:3? What did I do that? Let me think for a second. Well, so I want to go to 11:3, so let me go to 11:3 in my text, which is the one that she just read. And these have power, the two witnesses, to shut heaven so that does not rain in the days of their prophecy. Whoa, we've talked about having months of not having rain. It could be as much as 3.5 years of not having rain, right? And they have power over waters to turn them to blood, to strike the earth with plagues as often as they desire. I tell you, the Antichrist is going to have a difficult time with these two witnesses, and they're going to be ruling for the full 1,260 days. But you get the point that's really interesting? Believers, we're going to see the two witnesses, right? They're going to come on at the time the persecution begins and the time the Antichrist comes on the scene. The two witnesses will come on the scene. We're going to see in Jerusalem two guys, Moses and Elijah, however way you want to do that, and there's a lot of, we're talking about the particulars, who were there in Jerusalem preaching and doing, making things very difficult for the Antichrist. So we will see those actual days, those two witnesses, because that's part of the beginning, part of that tribulation. But they go out, we get raptured though before wrath begins. They continue on to the end of the week. We do not. We get raptured up before him. And that's the two witnesses. Same period of time. And so the two witnesses begin 1,260-day ministry. And then, I guess I did quote it. Maybe I just had another reason for that verse. And they will give power to the two witnesses. They will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. That's got to be itchy. I can only imagine what that's like. But I guess that would make you pretty agitated and probably be pretty angry as well. I don't know. But so anyway, the last point, last 2 points is he will, the Antichrist, will promote himself as God, right? And he said this, 2 verses, Daniel 11, and this is all beginning in the middle of the week. Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, not just some god, every god. So he's going to abolish all religion, right? And above every god, and shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, Jehovah himself, and shall prosper till, and I love the language, till the wrath has been accomplished. So, you see, he's got power, and he's going to be there for the tribulation, and then there's going to be a time of wrath. He's actually pointing out there's still going to be wrath to come. When he starts dealing with the wrath, we're at the time that we're raptured up, we'll begin the wrath. We don't know exactly how far into that second 3.5 years. Nobody knows. That's the point. No one knows the day nor the hour. But the point is, he's going to try to take away all religions and say, there's only one thing to worship, and that's me. Right? You get the idea? He's going to be saying, I'm the guy to worship. 2 Thessalonians says the same thing. We read 1, 2, 3. Now there's going to be 4. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped. That's pretty inclusive, wouldn't you say? So that he sits as God. And you always wonder, how do you sit as God? I don't know. He's going to sit in the temple. He's going to sit as God in the temple of God, showing himself. I think there's a little pun in there. Showing himself that he is God. He at least is convinced that he's God. I mean, you know, however way he works, he's deceived in enough to thinking that he truly is God. So all religions cease. All religions, they can hear Islam going, yeah, Allah is no longer great, whatever. This is going to be a tough time. Just imagine what it would be like on the world when he says, I'm the guy, nothing else matters. And the last point is, and it touches on part of what was going on in the first 3.5, he will use the 10-nation confederation to destroy the religious harlot. So let's deal with that for a moment. And then we're close. The 10 horns which you saw, Revelation 17, the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet. So back in the beginning, a 10-nation confederation is really, it's in word only. They don't have a lot of power. They don't have a lot of influence. They just got words. It's kind of like the UN or European Union or something. They have some influence, some power, but not really when it comes down to it, or NATO or some kind of organization like that. So they don't have much power as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. So when the beast comes on the scene, he says, okay, I'm going to give you authority, I'm going to give you power, and now you have authority for a period of time to do things. And he's going to tell them in particular something to do. And they were, these are all one mind. That's kind of fun. See a bunch of politicians get together and all agree on something, right? Okay. And they would be one mind, and great power and authority will be given to them. From the beast, the Antichrist, will give them authority. Then he says this, and the ten horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot. So the harlot is the religious, the Catholic Church in particular, because it's the city that that sits on seven hills and all that goes with it. So he says, these were, and we're talking about the harlot as one big lesson all by itself. These will hate the harlot, and will make her desolate and naked, and eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. Get the idea? She's going to be destroyed. She's going to be destroyed. Now, that doesn't happen in the first half. It happens when the Antichrist gives those ten nation confederation power. And what's happening in the first three and a half, she's actually riding it, Revelation 17. She seems to be in control, influencing for the first 3.5 years. But when the Antichrist comes on the scene, he changes it and says, no, now you go after her. Right? So she's no longer, you see the posturing going on for who's going to be in control. So in the middle of the week, the Antichrist gives power to the Ten Nation Confederation, who kills the harlot. The harlot. Because remember, there's only one person to worship, right? And that's the Antichrist. So he's going to try to get rid of all religions that way. So the Antichrist gives power to the Ten Nation Confederation, who says, go get her. The harlot, the Catholic Church, is going to be destroyed. And everyone will wonder. And like I said, we'll talk about that as one lesson. So these 13 points, hopefully you can look them up and verify them and make sense out of them. There's a lot going on there. Go ahead, Doreen.
Did you comment on number 10, or did I have a little nap or something?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's why you had the Revelation 6 in there. Okay, so Revelation 6 is where the seals begin, right? 6:3, so it says the peace, which in the Greek text is actually a Greek article, so he says it takes peace, but it's actually the peace that will be taken away from the earth. So in number one, well, back here, I should say, at the beginning of the week was when the peace was made, right? The agreement is made. In the middle of the week, the peace is taken from the earth, taken away, meaning the peace that was made here, that particular peace is no longer valid. It's going to be taken away. And that is actually the second seal, Revelation 6, 3 and 4. So he says, when he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, come and see. Another horse, a fiery horse, fiery red, went out and was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that the people should kill one another, and there should be given to him a great sword. There's a whole lot going to start taking place in the middle. When he takes the peace, persecution begins. Another passage that says more or less the same thing, that in the middle, when the Antichrist comes on the scene and the agreement is broken, it will start the time of tribulation. Kind of goes against anyone trying to say that there's a seven-year period. Doesn't fit all the verses. Just doesn't fit at all. Okay, Jay.
When he declares himself as God, is that the abomination?
No, that's a good question. So when he calls himself, it is an abomination, but it's not the abomination. When he calls himself God, that's blasphemy, that's evil, that's bad, and all that goes with it. But there is an abomination where he will set up that image. The Antichrist and the false prophet work together. He sets up an image. The image is a thing that's given the ability to breathe. It's given the ability to speak. It says, and to kill people. So the abomination is actually some sort of image. Like, remember back in Daniel, there was the image of the gold and the silver and the brass and iron and clay, feet of clay and all that. The image of Nebuchadnezzar or whatever, the king of Babylon at the time, where there's some kind of image is made in the future that looks like the Antichrist, we assume, but we don't know what it looks like. But that is the actual abomination that's going to be set up. It's going to be some, besides Antichrist himself, the Antichrist and the false prophet create this abomination. Yeah. Great, great question. Any other? Cool. Oh, it's after, a little late on time, but hopefully it made sense. Let's close. Father, thank you for loving us. Thank you for this time together. We looked at a lot of concepts here, just to look at something that begins at one point, but biblically, you tell us a lot begins at that point. And so, Father, you tell us to be aware of it, to look for it. In fact, that was the thing that Jesus told us to look for, was that abomination and the Antichrist revealing himself there. And so we want to be very aware of it when it happens, so we know what we know, Father, what you want us to know. So we pray that we strengthen one another, we encourage one another as we see your day approaching. In Jesus' name, amen.